Our speaker tonight is named Trent. Trent is a fellow advocate. He's an Oklahoma-based husband, father, Navy veteran, former corrections officer. I get to talk to those people every day, and an advocate for registry reform. He's currently completing his Master's of Science in Psychology with an industrial organizational focus and will graduate in June. As a person required to register, he spent years navigating the registry while raising three sons, trying to maintain family stability under the restrictions, stigma, and collateral consequences that come with registration. His advocacy is shaped by lived experience with how registry laws affect not only the individual, but also spouses, children, housing, education, medical care, employment, and normal family life. Trent brings a family-centered perspective to reform efforts and believes that meaningful change must include the voices of those who have lived under these policies every day. Our discussion will focus on the gap that can occur between what people believe they're agreeing to during a plea agreement and the long-term registry consequences that sometimes follow. And I think we will all be able to empathize there. Trent will also touch on the policy and statutory issues that can lead to those outcomes and some of the pathways people are exploring to address them. So, I have a first question for you, which I just moved to the other screen and I got to go back to it. All right. Trent, can you briefly ground the audience in why this issue matters to you?
So I took a plea bargain back in 2012 for possession of child pornography. I believe it was six or seven pictures or videos, roughly. And on the plea agreement, when I signed the plea agreement, I was not fully aware of exactly what the consequences of the registry would be. It just said on the plea agreement that the registry was just that I would be required to register. I apologize. I'm not a public speaker, so I get a little nervous, but
Me too.
it said that it just said that I would be required to register. And when I asked the district attorney, the ADA that was in the case, what my registry level would be, she told me level one. Of course, there was no recording in the courtroom at the time, and
Course.
no proof that I could go back to prove that she said I would be level one. And so
That wasn't in the plea agreement?
no,
That
ma'am,
is such bullshit.
I agree. It literally just said that I would be required to register with no level notification. It didn't even have where I was supposed to go register. It didn't, it just told me, so I got a packet in the mail telling me how long I had to register. When I went down to register, I had no knowledge whatsoever of what would, what it would entail, how long I would have, where I would be going, stuff of that sort. And so I went to the police department, which we'll go over this later in the question and answer, but I went down to the police department in Yukon, Oklahoma, and said, I'm here to register. I believe I'm supposed to be a level one, and that I need to go through the process. And she said, first off, you're living in an apartment you're not supposed to be living in. You have exactly 72 hours to move out of that apartment, and you need to find a place to stay until you get everything solidified. So that was my whole start to everything. And I mean, going back to the plea agreement and everything, there was nothing explained to me other than I was being convicted of possession of child pornography, and that I would have to register. And that's the basic gist of everything. Of course, I had the Computer Crimes Act so that they could stack, you know how that works. They stack the two felonies so that if later they want to charge again, they have the three felonies together and it stacks. So any state that stacks like that usually is a three strike state. And on the third strike, they're able to put you away longer when they put you away.
I actually was not familiar with that, the stacking.
The stacking done on purpose in three strikes.
I didn't meet my partner until after he was already out. So a lot of the things that other, people with families who are impacted know because they were there through the trial and all the signing and all that, but I didn't go through any of that. So I sometimes I'm dumb. So explain the stacking thing.
So in a lot of states, there's a three strike law. So three felonies and you're out, and they can put you behind bars for whatever the maximum penalty is on that three strike, 25, 15, life, depending on what the charge is. So they'll stack you with two to three charges so that if you ever get a felony again, they can use that to enhance your sentence further.
Instead of just charging you a felony for your crime today, they'll charge you with multiple felonies so that they can do that. Okay.
Yes.
Typical. I bet it's a lot easier to fill those prisons when they do it that way, though.
And we probably don't want to go into that because the financial side of the prison system, and the more people they have in prison, the more people that they convict, the more money they make. So it's a money
Absolutely.
making business, and it's no longer about getting an attorney and proving your innocence. It's about, especially
No.
on a charge like ours, it's
Yeah, there's no getting out of it. They've
no.
got it on your computer, that's all they need.
Yeah, and mine was a public computer, which is literally, it was like in the living room that multiple adults, multiple foster kids, multiple children in my home. My sister-in-law was living with us at the same time too, was on the computer continuously and stuff of that sort. I haven't even seen the videos to this day because the DA and my attorney both asked if I'd like to see the videos, and I had a daughter pass away right before all this happened. So, and I watched her go through a traumatic thing. She was diagnosed with holoprosencephaly before she was born. She was born with a rare brain condition and a lot of medical conditions, and we dealt with that for over a year. And she passed away at a year old. And not to get into too much of the trauma area of it, I watched my daughter go through CPR for about 15 minutes, and then me and my wife had to pull the plug. So I don't want to see any of that material. I don't want to watch it. I don't want to be a part of it because I watched my daughter be tortured for a full year with her condition. So it just, and I don't want to deflect. I don't want to, but it's just something that I'm adamant about. Child
Yeah.
pornography is not a victimless crime, so I want people to understand that it is not. There are victims on the other side of that picture. So it just, it's definitely something that I, and the way they went about convicting me was I was going to trial, didn't quite have the money. They had already pulled me through a full civil case to be able to get my other three children home. And when we finally got them home a month later, they came in and arrested me, and we went through about $25,000, all savings, anything we could possibly do to get our kids home. So first they used that part to run me out of money, and then they put me in jail a month after they came home, put me in county jail. And we didn't have the money to get me an attorney at the time, so I stayed in county jail for a while, waited with a OIDS attorney, which is an appointed attorney. And the appointed attorney was bound and determined to give me 10 years in prison. And so my family, for about 6 months, put together enough money to actually get me a paid attorney. And the paid attorney, when I finally got him, he got my bond reduced so I could get out. I was in for 15 months in county jail fighting with this appointed attorney. Finally, he got my bond reduced for me to get out. And when he got my bond reduced to get me out, again, I didn't have any way to make money while I was in there. My wife was out by herself taking care of three kids. She didn't have any way to make money. And our family's, is all pretty much poor. There's no there's no money
Yeah,
coming.
you don't have a grandma giving you just rolls of money. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So,
Did they let you count that 15 months or whatever that you spent in county jail? You didn't get to count that?
nope. The ADA said no time served. Didn't count it as time served. So,
Wow.
but it was definitely, from working on the law enforcement side of things for as long as I had, going through CLEAT, I was a CERT member. I was also a anti-terrorism teacher in the Navy with a meritorious medal for going above and beyond the call of duty for service. So it was confusing to me to watch the system work the way it did, because I was always a system-minded person, and I was taught that the when you're taught in law enforcement, you're taught that the system's supposed to work a certain way and things are supposed to go a certain way. And when you watch everything go backwards, it just kind of it falls apart, and you're confused because you've been taught all of this, and then it's all going the complete opposite direction of what you've been taught and what you've been told that it does. So
And seriously, until you're wrapped up in the system, you have no idea what is coming.
yeah. And being accused of a sex crime, and then the paper comes out with all of the stuff in it, and they used an article, and anybody can go read the article. Of course you can, because you have my full name. But in the article, they used overgeneralized statements to make sure that the public seen a monster instead of. And so, you remember I said I had about 6 to 7 videos slash pictures on my computers. And in the article, they took all of our family pictures and every possible picture on the computer and said there was over 10,000 pictures and videos on the computer. So it was kind of an overgeneralized statement that caused everybody to think that I had more than what I did.
Well,
So,
that's how they do it.
and anybody knows that an aggravated is anything over 100 pictures or videos or still frames or anything like that. So it's anything over 100. So if there was what that article said on my computer, then I would have been charged with aggravated. And I don't have aggravated possession. I have simple possession, which we'll get into that statute later, because the DA's discretion is what caused the thing that we're dealing with now. I should have been a level 1, but with DA discretion, she was able to use a higher, a more punishable statute, if you will. So she was able to take it since. So let's go into, I'll go into the slide real quick so that I can
Yes,
kind
go into your slide. And I feel like we kind of sort of already went through two, but
of. Okay, so in 2007, our daughter was born with the Ray brain condition, which we already know. Very young age, she was moved back to Fort Supply, and we tried to rebuild after trauma and grief. In 2010, a search warrant threw our family into another nightmare. So when they came with the search warrant and they knocked on our door, I was, of course, an officer. And so I had my service weapon in my drawer beside my bed, which I kept all the time. And then I also, we had our medications because our daughter had just passed away, antidepressants, sleep meds, stuff like that, all the stuff they give you when you're daughter or when a loved one passes away, especially a child. And so they used that to try to stack more charges, saying that we were abusing prescription drugs. And neither one of the bottles, we had both stopped taking them, because of course when you're on deep sleep medication and antidepressants, it and you've watched a traumatic experience, it pushes you deeper into nightmares and traumatic experiences over and over again. So I had completely stopped taking my antidepressants and sleep meds, and they were just in my drawer. Plus, I couldn't keep doing my law enforcement duty being on that stuff. So I had to be able to cope without dealing with that. So I'd stopped taking them. But we were still required to go through a drug program, a drug rehab program, even though neither one of us had ever drank or done drugs in our lives.
Well, and they probably made you pay for that.
Oh, yeah. And the fortunate thing that came from it is the parenting class that we had to take to get our kids back was incorporated in the drug class. So we didn't have to pay for them separately because they were incorporated, which is one good thing. Finally, after so many drug tests and so many alcohol tests, they said, "Do you even do drugs or alcohol?" I said, "No." I said, "I got a zero on your score test." And he said, "A lot of people get a zero. That doesn't mean they don't do it." And he said, "I've done 8 UAs on you so far, and you've always passed, and you never have alcohol in your system. So what
Yeah.
gives here? And I kind of explained it to him, and finally they just kind of moved through the motions because they knew I wasn't really supposed to be there, and neither was my wife.
Yeah.
So we
Yeah.
just went through the motions, and eventually we had a good relationship with them because they were really good people on that side. They're trying to heal people and do what's best for people in the best way possible. So it was
Well,
a
lucky you're getting good people there.
It was overall good experience in the drug class and the parenting class, and they taught us a lot on the parenting side. So I will say that was one positive out of all the negatives during that time was going to the parenting classes, and our counselors were really good and understood our situations and tried to help us work through it. And a lot of them didn't really know how to help us work through it because Oklahoma doesn't have a big counseling base for people on the registry. And most states don't have a good counseling base for people on the registry, as you know. So it's frustrating to see that there's not any counseling and not a whole lot of psychologists that can do this. And the only good psychologist in this situation would be somebody that's been through it, because somebody that's been outside of it and hasn't lived it doesn't quite understand
Yeah.
the full blast of it and what comes with it and where all of the trigger points are and why it happens and what your kids go through, what your wife goes through, what your I mean, my adult kids have gone through things that they should have never gone through because I'm on the registry. So
Yeah.
that's a big thing there. So
Yeah.
let's see.
Okay, so this is number three, right?
Yes,
So
sir.
before we talk about registry reform, how do you respond to people who say that these offenses involve real victims?
I agree that there are real victims. I want to be very clear that I do not believe possession of child sexual abuse material is victimless. It is not, which we've already discussed that. Real children are harmed in the creation of material and the continued possession, circulation, and consumption of it continue that harm. We need to do better at stopping both the production and consumption of this material, which gets me to the point is they like to arrest all of the people consuming it, which is, they should be arrested
Right.
for consuming it, but they
But
never
they don't
go after.
arrest the people who put it up there.
Yeah, so they leave it out there,
They
and
leave it
that's
out there because they want to catch more people. They're not
exactly.
trying to minimize the number of people who use the porn. They're trying to maximize the number of people who use the porn so that they can put more people in prison.
Exactly. And it's a supply and demand thing. If you leave the supply there, the demand's still going to be there. And unfortunately, I mean, I just watched the thing on Tim Tebow, and I'm really interested in some of the things he's doing. Unlike, people like Nancy
Who
Mace, Tim.
on TiVo?
Tim Tebow, he
I
runs a foundation trying to, he has built a computer that pinpoints all of the people that is viewing CSAM in the United States. And if you looked at that number, it is unfortunately very high. But if you look up the Tim Tebow Foundation and kind of listen to him and listen to his stuff, of course, Nancy Mace is trying to destroy everything possible right now. I'm not a big, huge fan of Nancy Mace, but she is a very, very hard politician against all registrants. So she pushes very hard against them. So we know that's a thing. But and Tim Tebow Foundation is a really good foundation that tries to stop CSAM, which is possession, at its roots, and tries to completely stop the production so that we don't continue to see these abused children be abused over and over.
Well, I personally believe, as soon as they find one, as soon as someone gets caught doing it, take it down. I don't understand what's so hard about that.
Find the source.
It does not seem that hard.
Yeah, find the source and get rid of the source. Don't just get rid of the both of the sides are a problem, but you need to destroy the source.
Absolutely.
If you destroy the
Oh,
source, go ahead, sorry.
hey, open the chat, Chuck. Why can't we set the chat to just automatically open? Like, change that in the settings because this happens every time. So annoying. You hear me, Chuck? I don't know how to open the chat. Okay, there we go. Everyone. I actually didn't. I just learned how to do it. Okay, the chat is open. Sorry, go on.
Okay, so getting back into it, We need to do better at stopping both production and consumption of this material. My advocacy is not about minimizing harm or pretending the material is not serious. It is serious, which we know. My concern is whether the registry, as applied, is accurate, transparent, proportional, and actually focusing on preventing harm, or whether it often becomes a broad system of public punishment that creates additional innocent victims inside families. Which we all know that it creates more victims than it actually saves. We all know Adam Walsh is the reason this all got started, and some of Adam Walsh's family has spoken out against the registry. So this was not created in the originality to become what it is today. It was created to monitor registrants, to be able to monitor them law enforcement wise, and not make it public. So the original was to where they just wanted to monitor. And there's also, I don't know if you know this, but in Oklahoma, I don't know about other states, they have a registry for violent offenders. So that registry is not made public. It is a private registry, and you can't just go look it up. Only the victims of that person can actually look up and see where that registrant is, and law enforcement. And that's the way the registry should be on both sides, because now what you're doing is you're showing people where you live, you're giving people an opportunity, especially this day and age with the internet and what the internet has. It's so easy to track somebody, to dox somebody, to find out about somebody. So if somebody at school looks something up on a phone, they see that this child's father is registered or this fa child's mother's registered. And then we've had this happen in our family. They start bullying the child. They start bullying the people that don't deserve to be bullied. They weren't part of the initial problem. They weren't convicted. There's no reason for them to have to go through it. But they do now because the internet has so much access to this stuff. And it causes harm on your children, your wives, your friends, your family, anybody that you're around. I've lost family members because, not because they don't like me, because they don't want to be associated with me from somebody else seeing it and seeing they're associated, because they'll be attacked for being associated with me. So I've lost contact with good friends and good family members because they had to move away. And because they didn't want to be martyred, so to speak, by being a friend with me or being a family member with me. So that's just so we know that, oh, go ahead, sorry.
Come on, are you ready for another question? Sorry, I was trying to answer a question in the chat.
Go ahead, you're good.
Okay, my next question was, I think, what led you to start researching Oklahoma registry laws? Are we
All
ready for
right.
that question? Or is it too
Yes,
soon?
ma'am. And just the broader thing that we were looking at before is that we never really know the consequences of our registry until we're actually in the registry. Like I said earlier, I walked into the police station with absolutely no knowledge. So the statutory, and we'll go over that later, the statute this in Oklahoma, it's statute based. So California, I believe, and Colorado, I believe, you go through a process where a board or a panel says you are this or that, or you're violent, or you're habitual, or you're, but you go through a panel where they assess your level and assess where you should be on the chart of levels. In Oklahoma, it's strictly statute based. There's no board members, there's no board, there's no nothing. It's only ran by statute.
Hang on a second, I gotta get to the door, but keep talking.
All right. So the statute number creates the actual registry level, and the registry level coming from that statute. All right. So it's like a sword in your side at some point, because you're trying to figure out why I just got, I was told level one in the DA's office. It wasn't in my paperwork. Then I showed up at the police department and
And
showed
it's
up.
just shocking to me that they don't put your tier number in the plea deal. Like, how
They
do
don't
they
put
get
it
away with that?
in Oklahoma. They don't put anything, and
How is that legal? I don't like it's The fact that they don't bother to put it in the plea deal tells you that they're planning on,
Doing
that I get
something else.
calls all the time from people who said they told me I would be this, but then later they made me this other different thing.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened to me. And I went back looking at my paperwork because I was trying to, and education is the most important thing that you have in as a tool in this situation. Because if you're not educated, then they can get you. And I was not educated on that side of stuff, but I
Yeah.
have educated myself moving forward, and I'm trying to educate people because people that are currently going through the process and trying to work out a plea deal and stuff like that. Even people in this group probably have situations where they're waiting on it. They need to make sure that they are asking the right questions and
Get something on paper.
make sure it's documented. Because if it's like
Yeah.
me, I should have asked for a court reporter. Always ask for a court reporter so that whatever's said in court can be documented. Because if I would have done that, I would have had a documented answer on the court report. And then also,
Yeah.
when you're reading through your plea, I was so nervous and so distraught at the time. My wife was sitting there with me, and I was so nervous and distraught that it caused me to look at the, and my main attorney wasn't there. It was one of his partners. And I looked at him and I said, "Can I fight this?" And I was told by him and my main attorney that if I tried to fight it, they would just file charges on my wife, they would take my kids away, and
Yep.
there's if I
Yeah, they
tried
have all the power. You've got no power.
if I tried
If
to fight
someone
it,
has,
they
if
go
someone
ahead.
has a question, do you want to wait till a question and answer session or raise their hand? I should have asked
They
that
can
earlier.
write. I can answer the question now if they want.
Okay, so Matt just had his hand up a minute ago, and then I think the hand went down. But Matt, if you want to ask your question, raise your hand again.
People say I had the same kind of issue in Oklahoma. I'm in Oklahoma as well. I wasn't fully made aware of the full ramifications of my situation, what was about to happen to me. Before when I left the judge, left the courthouse to go to the probation office in the county that I was initially charged and arrested in, because that's where the detective. Mine was speaking to a an undercover cop and all that, but so whenever I got to the probation office is when I finally was made aware of that it was lifetime and that I was given habitual and that it was going to be a mark on the driver's license as well. The way my lawyer ran through the plea agreement paperwork in the courthouse, right outside the courtroom, we were tucked away in a little like cut off area where like a bench of people was also just right there. So he was trying to be quiet to not overhear the situation because it's a sex offense and didn't want to take the chance of people out there causing problems and getting mad about, whatever, because that's how people can be. So he just went through everything and I signed stuff and then realized what I had just done. I did get a second lawyer and we tried to withdraw my plea, but she kind of took the wind right out of my sails whenever we got in front of the judge. But that whole process to even file that motion, they said they had like 90 days to respond. But then they went past 90, and then they came back and was like, "Oh, we actually have 120 days to respond to you." So they pushed it out another 30 to get to 120, but then even went a few days past that. Still ended up getting a court date though. And then the judge was like, "Well, you said all this, and you said you agreed, and you weren't under duress and all that. So why should we do this now?" And I turned to my lawyer and was like, said, "Hey, can I speak freely?" And she didn't really want me to say anything because she didn't know what I was about to say. And he said, "Whatever you get, it's what you get. It's going to be a speedy trial. It would happen in 2 weeks." And my charge was 1 to 25, I think. And then or 20 to, I don't remember what it was, but either way, it wasn't a good alternative to the 5 years suspended that I already was dealing with. So I did my 2 years supervised, three unsupervised, and now I'm just dealing with the registry situation. But yeah, I didn't know the full ramifications either until dealing with probation officers
Nobody does.
and
The plea,
going over.
the
But
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
no, you're fine. It was just I also jumped around a couple of probation officers because going to your back to what you were saying, Trent, about alcohol. My first when I left Pott County to go to I tried to go to Cleveland County, and then that guy, the guy that I got there, he saw that my case had involved me talking about being drunk and everything. So he said, "Sounds like you have an alcohol problem. Let's add on AA meetings." And I was like, "Yeah, I can't really do that." But I was getting an attitude with him, and he was like, "Oh, well, sounds like you might need anger management too." And I was like, "Look, I'm already going to counseling, and I'm already doing polygraphs. Like, I can't afford anything else." And then he was mad that he couldn't find me at the hotel that I was staying at because I wasn't staying there. I would leave and go stay at my girlfriend's house, and but I didn't tell him. And he didn't really ask. I was like, I was just at my parents or something. But then I left and went to Oklahoma County, and the lady that I had there was kind of difficult. And then I made it out to Canadian County, and they were the nicest POs that I had to deal with. So.
Hey, whoever has something going on in the background up there, can you mute yourself? Thank you. All right, we have another hand up. Do you want to wait a minute or answer another question?
I'm
Oh,
done
sorry.
after that. I'm anybody. Yeah, whoever's up next can go. I'm done now.
Okay, so let me read this off real quick, and then we can go into the next question so that I can kind of give them where
Yep.
we're at right now. This is
Absolutely.
at the time of my plea, my paperwork described possession, but I did not fully understand the registry level or long-term duration that would follow. I first learned I had been assigned level two when I reported to register at the police department. I had also initially been informed that my classification would be level one. So when I was later assessed as level two, that discrepancy raised serious questions for me. I contacted my attorney and told there was nothing that could be done because the plea had already been signed. That moment pushed me to start researching how Oklahoma's criminal statutes, plea paperwork, judgments, and registry statutes interact. So that was my introduction to the world of statutes and trying to dig into things. And as Matt was saying, I did call an attorney to pull the plea and try to get all of this fixed, but they were anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000 for the plea to pull the plea with no guarantee that anything would actually come out of it. And like Matt said, 99% of the judges in Oklahoma do not allow you to pull the plea. It's especially on a crime such as ours. They automatically side with the ADA, who usually sides with not pulling the plea because they know if they pull the plea, it'll unravel stuff, and then they have
Yeah.
to start proving stuff again. And if it's years later, and all of that situation. So I didn't see the point in pay an
Yeah.
attorney $5,000 to $7,000 that I didn't have.
Right. Plus, you've already spent all your money. You know,
Yeah.
they've already kept you incarcerated for 15 months, and you got no income, and so it's not like you got money just rolling around waiting to be spent.
Yeah, and that was the big thing is luckily when I got out, I hadn't pled yet, so I had a job. I got a job before I pled to the situation, but I had a manager. Here's the bad part is I was moving up into management. And as I was moving up into management, of course, anybody that moves into management, any job's going to do a background check. So as soon as they did the background check, they seen everything. And then they said, well, I'm sorry, but we can't promote you to manager. You've got to stay where you're at right now. And then, so I moved to a different job, oil field. I started as a floor sweep in an oil field job, and then moved my way up to the operations manager in on a pipe yard in an oil field job. So, it was a lot of hard work and a lot of, determination, and a lot of dirty days and coming home late and stuff like that. So I lost a really good job that kept me in the office and kept me, out of the oil field, and then had to go into the oil field just to be able to survive. And it wasn't with our registration status, most jobs and most places, they use that registry to give us lower pay. Of course,
Course.
if you're a felon, they're going to use you and abuse you as much as possible, because they know there's not a whole lot that you can do outside of where
A
you're at
lot of
now.
options. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and if you're a registrant felon, they know darn well that there's nothing you can do. So they use it to their advantage quite a bit on the job side of things. So it's definitely was a struggle at the beginning, but a lot of the and pulling the plea was an option, but not an option, if you know what I mean. If you ever get an attorney, a lot of attorneys, make sure you're finding an attorney that is knowledgeable in sex offenses, which mine wasn't. He was a great attorney. I can't say that he wasn't, but he was not fully knowledgeable in the statutes of sex offenses, and that's what caused the statute not to be looked at. The statute got placed, and once it was placed and I signed it, it was done, and that statute stuck with me. So just make sure when you're getting an attorney, you're getting a knowledgeable attorney. And remember that there are attorneys out there that prey on people in our situations, and they will tell you, well, I can possibly do this, I can possibly do that, I can possibly do this, and promise you a lot of things, and they'll definitely take your money. And by the time it's all over with, you pretty much can go on a Google search and see exactly what's going to be the outcome of that before you actually go through spending all that money to do it. I'm not trying to dissuade anybody from doing something like that. I'm just making sure people understand that they need to do their homework prior to going in and talking to an attorney and paying him a lot of money, because sometimes you can pay that attorney a lot of money to do something that you already know wasn't possible when you started, if you just do your homework and make sure it's there. So,
Yeah.
and so I believe we're on to question number five, right, Ann?
Okay. What are the legal layers that people often do not understand?
There are three legal layers people often do not see clearly. First, there is the criminal statute defining the offense. Second, there is the plea agreement and judgment. Third, there's the registry statute that determines classification duration. That's not in all states. That is definitely in Oklahoma. Some states don't use statute classifications. Some states, of course, use a board to make sure the board actually assesses and sees what your criminal past is, assesses everything. But in Oklahoma and a lot of other states, they do a statute based where they just use the statute, and you're automatically on a level due to that statute. So most people think the plea itself is the full consequences, but in registry cases, the registry can become the longest and most life-altering part of the case. A person may believe to understand the sentence, but not fully understand how the registry level and duration will operate afterwards. So, the registry is the actual consequence of anybody that pleads to a sex charge. And so they kind of hide that consequence because they know that you're not going to have a whole lot of knowledge about it. There's not a whole lot of knowledge online about it unless you've been through it. You don't read up on it unless you've been through it, or unless you're an attorney or somebody that has to deal with it on a daily basis. So nobody really knows the full consequences of that. And most ADAs and DAs will take advantage of that situation.
Definitely. All right, we have a quick question, I think.
Okay.
John?
Yes, good evening. You covered a good deal of what I wanted to ask you about just within the last few minutes. But let me throw in a couple of things. And one, the attorney is very, very important. The attorney that I had at the time my trouble came around. At some point, concluded I was guilty and basically pressured me into taking a plea bargain. His words that I remember crystal clear after 30 years: "It doesn't matter what kind of evidence you have. It doesn't matter what alibi witnesses you bring in. If we go to trial before a jury is going to find you guilty no matter what." So that is another factor that needs to be kept in mind in looking around for, if you will, a competent attorney. But I'd like to have you kind of talk a little bit more about, and again, this is something that happened to me. This is something that has happened to pretty well everyone. Okay. We, in so many cases, we hear the line, or we experience the line, "Ignorance of the law is no excuse." How can we, in all honesty, know the right thing to do because of our ignorance? I'd like for you to talk about, if this is going to fall into what you've been doing, okay, into ways of educating the general public, people who are on the registry, their families, okay, people who might, and of course, this could be just about anybody in this country, okay, might run into it. How do we effectively educate people on this issue, especially with so many people out there still believing, still operating under the view, "Oh, I'll never get into this kind of trouble"?
So I will kind of touch on what you're saying right now, and believe me, all of the stuff that I went through, and being a law enforcement officer and being in the military and everything like that, I was under the same purview that you just said. I was like, "Oh, I'm never going to get into that kind of trouble. I have nothing." So let me tell you something about the original detective interview. This will kind of push on that a little bit. That I was so, even as a law enforcement officer that went through CLEAT training, that went through law training, that knew most of the statutes and knew better than to do what I did during the interview. So I was young. I was, I think, 24 at the time everything started. So I was relatively young. I can't remember exactly what age. I know the end of it, I was about 26 or 27. It was a whole long process, as you know. But so when I sat down with the detective for the interview, of course, they separate me and my wife, which they always do. And so I looked at the detective and said, "Do I need an attorney?" And I'm going to tell everybody in this room right now, if you're going through a case, you're being interviewed, you're going in to talk to any detective or any police officer about anything, the first word and the last word out of your mouth in that interview is, "I need an attorney." And don't stop saying that until you have one. Because
Absolutely.
I said, and being rich, my mind went to Dummyville, and I said, "Do I need an attorney?" And he said, "Not if you're cooperating." And that was the famous last words. So cooperation just cooperates you right into a conviction. And here's how they came up with the computer that they came up with that had the stuff on it. So going back to the foster and adopted kids that we had in the house continuously, I was hardly ever home. I worked in corrections, so you know that's true. They're always understaffed, so I was working double shifts probably 3 times a week. I was working, God, I'd say 75, 80 hours a week. And so the kids were always home with the computer. And I would come home and they'd be like, "Oh, the computer's broke again." And I'm like, "Dang it." So I would have to fix the computer, get rid of the viruses. And back then, you know how hard that was compared to what it is today. Get rid of all the pop-ups, the viruses, and the stupid things the kids had gotten into. So eventually they had destroyed that computer beyond measure. So we finally took that computer out of the house, put it back in our mother-in-law house, which was behind the house, just kind of became a storage building. And it was done. It was trash. It was toast. So we put it back there to throw it away. And we meant to throw it away way prior to all this happening. We had just got back from a vacation in Carlsbad. We had saved one of those blue jugs up with change. Every time I'd walk in the door, I'd throw change in this jug, and my wife would do the same thing because, we can't afford vacation, so the change afforded it for us. So we filled that blue jug up, and whatever the blue jug filled up, we said, okay, we're going to Carlsbad Caverns because that's what we can afford. We had just came back. We were 3 days back from vacation when the search warrant was issued. But dang it, I lost my train of thought. Give me just a second. But anyway, so I'm back to the computer. It was in the mother-in-law house, and they hadn't even went in there to search the mother-in-law house. So the detective asked if there's any other computers in the house. It wasn't on the search warrant. Of course, they can expand search warrants later, blah, blah, blah. And I said, and I didn't think I had anything to worry about. Kind of like you said earlier, I had nothing to worry about. And I said, yes, there's a computer in that back house back there that, so I didn't know there was anything to worry about. So I said, there's a computer in
So
the
this,
house.
yeah, wow. This wasn't even you.
Yeah.
It was just a million. Wow.
So
That's a
I said, the computer's back there in the back house. You can go get it. I didn't think I had anything to worry about. And so, we went through all the civil trial, went through everything. I was working as an armed security officer through the whole process. I was working in a library as an armed security officer, working at MidFirst Bank, which most people in Oklahoma would know that's one of the main banks, as an armed security officer. So I had to leave the prison because of all the stigma and, the inmates and the articles and stuff like that. And I went into armed security. And so when they found that computer, from the time they found that or took that computer, a year later, after my kids were returned, they finally found the material on the computer in a red drive, which anybody that knows anything about a computer, a red drive is the drive that it goes into just before it falls off the computer because so much stuff has been written over it. So they found it in a red drive that was completely almost in a trash bin, just almost gone. And the computer that I was about to throw away because it was trashed by the kids that I had constantly kept reworking to keep it working for the adopted kids, the kids, and all the people that got on the computer. And so moving forward with that, it took them over a year to find all that and then arrest me after my kids came home. Whether that was them just waiting for the perfect time to go ahead and arrest me because they knew I was out of money, knew I just got out of jail, knew that I didn't have a whole lot of financial backing, so this was the best time to do it. So they just waited to do it then, or it just took them that long to find it.
honestly, I think they have a long enough list all the time. I think there's enough people visiting these sites that they can, I think they just have a long list of people waiting to be arrested. It
Yep.
just takes a while
And
because
then,
so many
so
people visit these sites.
the feds refused to file charges. They said there's not enough there. They said, I'm not going to file charges on you, on him, because there's not enough. So the state picked it up. And when the state picked it up, I had a DA that had three daughters, an ADA that had three daughters and was pregnant. And, it was her mission to run my life from what it seemed like. So she was not going to let anything go. It was going to be me or nothing. And she spent all this money to get all of this stuff done. She wasn't letting that go. And then, so I was going to go to trial. I sat down and told my attorney, I said, I don't care what I have to do. I'm going to trial on this. And that's when he said, look, if you try to go to trial, they're going to file charges on your wife. If they file charges on your wife, they're going to take your children back. He said the only way for you to be able to have somewhat of a normal family, to keep your children in the house and not go to prison, because you will if you go to trial, is to take this plea. And that's when I had to take the plea. So it was very frustrating, and it became a situation where I was like, how do you take a computer out of a house that 5,000 users have used over the last 4 or 5 years it's been in the house? And I'm not trying to justify anything or anything here. It was on my computer somehow, some way. I was responsible for not properly monitoring parenting or keeping the things off the computer. So I can't deflect, because ultimately it was my fault. It was there, and it was there. So
I personally believe that sometimes deflecting is okay. Like, yeah, because it's such baloney. When Chuck got arrested, his ex-wife and two of his kids were saying, no, this was our porn. We did this. We did it at mom's house and we did it at dad's house. It was ours. The mom was willing to say that. Both the sons were willing to say it's ours. They didn't care because they couldn't arrest the kids as easily as they could arrest Chuck.
Oh yeah, and so there's a lot more behind the story to the adopted daughter, but seeing as she was a minor at the time, I don't want to go into all of that stuff, but I will kind of because it ties into the story. So the adopted daughter wanted to go back to her biological mother, and she had gotten into contact with her biological mother. And so wanting to go back with her biological mother was not possible until she got released from our custody. So she pushed to get released from our custody and used a lot of methods to do that. There was a lot of reporting done. She reported to DHS 5 different times. DHS came into our house multiple times, said there's nothing going on here, blah, blah, blah. And it just pushed everything, and they kept pushing it because of the adopted daughter. So we eventually, during the civil case, severed ties with the adopted daughter. She went back to her biological mother. Within 3 weeks, she had been kicked out of school for smoking weed and ditching and went right back into custody and was put back into foster care. So that's a whole different story for a different day. We'll go into that because I want to get more into the policies of what we're trying to talk about today. But that whole story was about somebody who decided they wanted something and used every tool in the book because they had been taught to manipulate through DHS. And
Sure.
it just became a bigger thing than it was. So, and she was caught lying multiple times on FBI when the FBI came and did her forensic interviews. So when we went to trial, or went not trial, when we went to the stuff moving forward, they I'm sorry, John, I didn't mean to cut you off that early. But when we went to trial, they moved into a situation where they wouldn't let my children testify, but they let her testify. And my children were trying to testify on my behalf, saying, I seen other people looking this stuff up, including the adopted daughter, my sister-in-law, and other people looking this stuff up on the computer. And they had seen it and seen things happen, but they wouldn't let them testify
Yeah.
because they were minors. But
I've heard this story so many times.
the adopted
Yeah.
daughter was a minor. But she was allowed to testify because it was on their behalf
Right.
and
It's
in their
because they
behalf.
don't actually care who's guilty. They just want to get someone in trouble. They want
Exactly.
someone to fill that bed in that prison. They
Yep.
want someone to
And
be paying all these fees, pay for all these fake therapies and polygraphs and yeah.
yeah. Oh, yeah. So go ahead, John.
With that in mind, okay, a couple of things. Like in my particular case, just for comparison and contrast, the two minors who accused me, I learned during the time between my arrest and plea bargain, that the two who accused me were absolutely terrified of testifying in court. And they were absolutely terrified of having to take a polygraph. I, on the other hand, was for months was saying, "You want me to take a polygraph? I'll take it." So here I was trying to cooperate, and the minors who accused me, no way. But the follow-up question I'd like to ask for as part, say, of this training, as part of making sure that maybe if we ever have to face up to anything like that again, not only for us on the registry, but the broader public, with your background, with your training, more and more people have been coming up with criticisms about, say, some of the interview techniques that were used, something that was referred to, I think, as the Reid, REID technique. Where you go in and you say to someone who's been accused, well, your partner in crime just confessed, da 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 da. Not only that, would you have any guidelines, any references, any cautions that might help to determine if the police, if the prosecution, in fact, has a weak case?
So that's a hard question, and being on the side, on the law enforcement side of it, bringing people in on the administrative when you found them. I worked a segregated housing unit for a long time, which is people that are the worst of the worst that go to the segregated housing unit for multiple infractions. Most people know what SHU or the regimented housing unit, the place where the people.
Shoe, gotta go to the shoe.
Yep. So that was where I worked most of the time. And between that and the regimented inmate discipline program, which is a military program for youthful offenders, that if they did the program, they could be released, and their charges would go away after so long. So I worked both sides of that because I was a prior military. So I worked that side because I was able to do the marching and the yelling and the PT and stuff like that. And sorry, my dogs have just decided to start barking for no reason. But the hard part about that is both sides, let's look at it this way, both sides are playing poker. And don't ever, my only advice here, because I'm not an attorney and I can't really push any advice forward, not be an attorney, but my biggest advice here is do not answer any questions. Ask for an attorney. Make sure your attorney is answering all the questions for you. If you start answering questions, they can use your words, manipulate them, turn them around, make them what they want them to say, and use that against you later. An attorney is trained in all the legal matters to be able to realize when you're being manipulated, to realize when they don't have enough, to realize why they don't have enough. They've got the discovery. You don't have the discovery in front of you, so you don't know what evidence they have. So if you're looking on that side of the table and you're looking at somebody asking you questions and you don't know what kind of evidence they have, and they're asking you open-ended questions and you're answering them, later on, they can go back to those questions and say, well, you said this, and this is not what you're saying now. And this is concrete because this is what you said. That's why the Miranda rights are there. Use your Miranda rights. Do not do what I did, for one. Do not say, do I need an attorney if you're cooperating? There's no such thing as cooperating. You cooperate yourself directly into a conviction. Use your attorney, use the stuff available to you within your rights, which a lot of people unfortunately don't know their constitutional rights. And for anybody in this group, I would urge you to go in and find your constitutional rights, because even as a registrant, we also have constitutional rights that protect us. We are not under protected status, but there are constitutional laws that can protect us from certain things like attacks, discrimination, and stuff of that sort, because it is against the law. So make sure that you're going in and looking at the statutes and looking and make sure that you know what your constitutional backing is on anything. And again, attorney, attorney, attorney. Those are the only words that should come out of your mouth during an interview, during a warrant search, during anything. Do not answer questions. If it's not in the warrant, do not hand it over. Basically, and like I said, don't talk yourself into a guilty plea. Use your attorney. That way he can get the all of the stuff that they have on you. He knows right there and right then. He can talk to you about it. He can answer the questions for you.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we're on question six. Am I correct, Dan?
Yes. Sorry, I had it pulled up. How does Oklahoma's offense-based registry system work?
All right, so Oklahoma uses an offense-based registry structure under 57 OS 582.5. The offense of conviction serves as the basis for the assigned registry level. The same section allows a level to be increased under certain circumstances, but says the level cannot be reduced through that override process. So they can increase your level at any time by this statute, but they cannot reduce it. No matter what, unless your statute is changed. It's the only way they can reduce the statute if it's changed. So The same section allows level to be increased under certain circumstances, but says level cannot be reduced through that override process. That means the statute listed in the judgment becomes the mechanism that controls the registry level. And the registry level then controls duration and reporting obligations. Oklahoma law and ODOC material provide 15 years for level one, 25 for level two, and life for level three or habitual aggravated status. Level one also has a possible relief pathway, excuse me, after 10 years under certain conditions. That is why the statute matters so much. In Oklahoma, a statute number can become the difference between 15 and 25 years on the registry. Just a statute number, nothing else. And we
Wow.
will explain why that is so ambiguous later, because it can become so. And again, later on, we'll look at what exactly, the statutes and where they land and what happens. And not to make anybody feel, like they're worse or, anything like that. But the statutes align the way they do. And I'm going to begin talking about that in the next slide. And I hoped I answered what I needed to answer for you, John, in the past, in that conversation. So we are on to the next. So
What
this.
is the specific statutory issue in your case? Are you ready for that question?
Yeah, let me kind of go through this real quick, and this will transition into question seven. So if you look at here on this, it says purchase, procurement, and possession of child pornography is a level one. Publication, distribution, or participation is a level one. And of course, indecent exposure, we won't go there because you can drink a beer, go out, pee on a trash can, and you're now on the registry, which is retarded to me. But so the same type of conduct, different statute, different outcome. The statute problem, where the statute language and registry levels become the core issue anchor, same type of contact, diff conduct, different outcomes. So I believe we're on question seven now.
Okay. What is the
So
specific statutory issue in your case?
the specific statute issue is that Oklahoma has multiple statutes containing possession-related language, but those statutes do not all carry the same registry level. The statute used in my judgment was 21 OS 1021.2. The Oklahoma Department of Corrections level assignment chart lists 21 OS 1021.2 as level two. That same chart lists 1024.2 purchase, procurement, or possession as level one. It also lists 2107.1040.12A aggravated possession as level one. If you remember me stating, I only had six to seven. I believe it was seven. I've got the list up there. They have them highlighted. There's seven highlighted pictures or videos. I have the list in. I have a little book that has all of my stuff in it, so that I can reference it back in case I can ever try to challenge this. But I'll go. We'll talk about the challenging, what I've tried to do, and what I'm planning to do, and stuff like that, to move forward to try to get reduced back to the level one, because the level one is the only way, the only pathway for me to get off the registry before 25 years. My 15 years, which is on level one, would have been up in 2027, which is next year, or my 15 years. So I would be able to already apply to get off the registration because I'm past the 10-year period. And I would be off the registration next year if the level one statute would have been applied. So there's a lot to do with the statutes, and I think there should be a different method in Oklahoma to do this. But again, aggravated possessions is level one. I had six to seven. Aggravated is 100 or more. So just because of the discretion statute that the ADA used, I have been deemed a level two, even though I had lesser amount of whatever it was than somebody that has 100, 1,000, or aggravated, or all that. So I am actually doing the same registration time as somebody that had far more, not saying far worse case, but had more material than I could ever
Yeah.
have. So, all right. So let's see. That is the problem with the The conduct described in the plea was possession based, but the statute selected in the judgment placed me into a 25-year category. Then the statute selection itself became the controlling factor in adding years to my registration. So we'll go on to the next one.
Okay. Can you explain the issue with the possession language? And hang on, I gotta stretch my window. And the overlapping statutes. The issue with possession language and overlapping statutes.
So the overlap matters because Oklahoma has more than one statute that can involve possession-related conduct. And we just discussed that, and you saw it in the chart. 102.4.2 is directly titled Purchase, Procurement, or Possession of Child Sexual Abuse Material. The current public text said it is unlawful to buy, procure, or possess child sexual abuse material. So you see that that is the simple possession charge. Anything under 100, that should be the charge that is charged to anybody with possession with anything under 100 videos. Anything over 100 is automatically aggravated possession, which is in Oklahoma. I don't know about other states, but that's Oklahoma states. Anything 100 or more is aggravated possession. Anything under 100 is simple possession. At the same time, broader statutes can also contain possession-related language. This is where we get into discretion, or be used in cases where the conduct described sounds possession-based. That is where the problem starts. If overlapping possession-related statutes produce different registry outcomes, then the statute selected during charging or plea negotiations can decide whether the person is treated as level one or level two. In practical terms, that can decide whether the person registers for 15 years or 25 years. Not because you did a different crime, but because the ADA selected a different statute. So
Yeah.
that it's basically, and in Oklahoma and most states, broad statutes are created for that reason. So the DA can accelerate punishment by using the statute they believe best fits you, not the crime. So if they believe you did something more, or they believe you deserve more punishment, they use that discretion, use a larger statute to increase your punishment or increase what's going on. Now, you can fight that in any regular criminal case that has a felony or a misdemeanor. You can fight that because they can't excessively punish you. It's against the law. You can't. Excessive punishment is against the law. And if it's deemed excessive, then you can fight it and you can go back and you can get that discretionary thing taken off. Unfortunately, as a registrant, it's changing and starting to become more punitive, so they're going to eventually have to call it punitive. But currently, in most environments, they call a registration a collateral consequence. So it's not considered punishment, so you can't fight excessive punishment because it's considered collateral consequence.
Have you been following the Smith v. Doe, all the Smith v. Doe stuff in Michigan?
Oh yeah, that I've followed it, and they actually, that is a good thing that went in our favor because they finally considered it punishment. And the way
In
Oklahoma's,
Michigan,
oh,
only in
sorry.
Michigan.
But yeah, but that starts a pattern that will push towards other states, and it'll start collecting. And when you know as well as I do, when you get a steamroll rolling, eventually it starts. And so that brings me to, I'm sure we have some people in here from Oklahoma that are in our NARSOL and OKRSOL groups. That brings me to a point. We just had a statute, HB 3040, and it is a, trying to think right now, it is a zone of safety statute. And this zone of safety now is adding skating rinks, bowling alleys. And it's so broad. It says anywhere that a child congregates or participates in activities that we can't even literally walk past those places without having an actual reason, or we can be considered loitering in those areas and can be convicted of a crime. And it's even worse for aggravated and habitual because they're not even allowed to enter those zone of safety areas unless they have a good reason. Some of those zone of safeties, I did read into the statute a little bit. If you have children, you are exempt because the federal Amber Law says that you can take your kid to school, be there for up to 30 minutes dropping off, picking up during activities, during school, and stuff like that. So make sure you're reading into the Amber Law to know what you're allowed to do, because there are some statutes written in there that can relieve you of some of that pressure as a parent, because I had to read into it to make sure I was allowed to pick them up. Because, of course, when my wife was sick or something was going on or something happened, it was just me and her. So I had to go to the school to pick them up, and I didn't want to get in trouble. So I wanted to make sure. So the International Amber Law actually gives you the right as a parent to be able to pick your child up at school. You have
And
30.
does that, it doesn't matter what your state says?
The state usually incorporates that law. So they can't tell you that you can't pick up your child from school, because the Amber Law enacted it so that it would, because there, I can't remember the exact lawsuit it was, but the lawsuit was a parent that had a child that had to be dropped off, picked up from school. He was a single parent, didn't have any other way to do it, so he filed a lawsuit. And the lawsuit came back, and they created the Amber Law to be able to give parents the right to take their kids to school, pick them up, and it gave them a way to be able to. I mean, it's a time limit. Some states it's 10 minutes, some state it's 15 minutes. Some states you have to report to the school administration that you're picking up your children. There's all kinds of different laws, but there are laws in most states that allow you to pick up your children as long as you can have contact with your children and stuff like that. There are laws that allow you to pick up the kids, to drop them off, to pick them up from activities, to drop them off at activities, as long as you're not going to the activity and participating in the activity. Of course, some states allow you to. Oklahoma is definitely not one of those states. You even have to have permission to go to church. So, you have to have permission from the pastor to go to the church. So just a little bit of information there. If anybody goes to church, make sure that you're asking for permission, because that is something that can get you into trouble. Some places up in Wisconsin make you report to the school. Some places in Pennsylvania make you to report to the school and tell them that you are the parent, you are on the registry, and you need to be there for certain things to pick up or stuff like that. So each state has their own individual law of that Amber Law, but it is a federal law. So that's one thing that people need to understand, that that is a limitation. Even in that zone of safety law, I did read that there are some exempts for parents that have children on the registry. So I hate the law because it's too broad, too overbearing, too much, and it needs to define certain things such as loitering and where I can and can't be and stuff like that, so that we understand what we are allowed to do and not allowed to do. But it does have wording in there that states that parents of children that need to be dropped off at school or blah 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 is exempt from certain things. So go ahead and read the statute to. The one thing that people don't do is they see the statute on the screen and they go, oh, that statute's this and that and this and that. But they don't read through the entire statute and actually get to know the statute and know what's allowed and what's not allowed. Somebody emailed earlier in OKR Salt that, how do I go to doctor's appointments? How do I go to medical appointments? How do I go to this? How do I go to the grocery store? And how do I do this? And a lot of people don't understand that. Yes, they can enforce that law over broadly, but most of the time they're only going to enforce it if you're doing obvious things that are in conflict with what you're supposed to be doing. I mean, of course, if you're sitting at a park watching children and you have no children there playing in Oklahoma, if you're not habitual or aggravated, you're allowed to be at a park, you're allowed to be at a bunch of different places as long as you're at that place for a reason. And the best thing to do in that situation, if you're going to a birthday party or you're going to a park or you're going to do something, just message your officer that you check in with, because mine, I'm ex-law enforcement, so I have to have a detective at the police department to check in with. I'm held to a little bit higher standard than most, and I have to, instead of going to the sheriff's office like most people do, I actually have to report directly to the detective at the police station. So
Wow.
I have his email, and I have a pretty good relationship with him. He's a nice guy. Doesn't really, I've had four different people that I check in with over the last 13 years of my registration, but he just email them, give them a text, give them an update, say, hey, I'm going on birthday party. It's on such and such date. And I need you to be aware that I'm doing this, or I'm gonna go to Chuck E. Cheese with my kids. I need you to be aware that I'm doing this. Just keep them updated. And usually most law enforcement do not have the capacity to enforce the broad set of laws that they're putting forth. And we're actually cutting funding in Oklahoma for our law enforcement. So you're adding extra steps onto law enforcement that's already pretty well, they don't have enough as it is to enforce the laws that they have, and they're being forced to enforce more laws. So most of them, as long as you're doing the right thing in the right place and not being the person that got you in that position in the first place, then usually they're not going to just go, hey, you're going to the grocery store, I'm going to arrest you and take you to jail because you passed this on to safety.
Right.
It's a common sense thing to, and I've had to do a lot of workarounds in this full time that I've been involved. 13 years is a long time to be on the registry and raise three kids. So I've had to learn what I can and can't do. I went to Frontier City and with my kids, and through a work thing that I had to go to, it was a mandatory work thing. So like I said, I just contacted my officer and said, hey, I'm going to Frontier City. I'm going to be with my family. I'm going to be with my people. And I have a work, and later on, it was a Frontier City work thing. I said, I got a work thing. I will be there with my family and my work. I just want you to know where I'm going to be. It's just keeping good communication with the officers that you check in with. They always have emails. They always have ways to communicate. Just communicate. And I know that sucks, but it's the balance that we have to play with to make sure that we're staying within our limits, and that,
It's
and
self-protection as much as anything.
yeah, and don't make them do their jobs. So, most law enforcement don't, I will tell you, most police officers don't want a lengthy report to write out during their shift. So, they're only going to do what you make them do most of the time. Some of them, there are. Just like anybody else out there, there's good and bad police officers, and some of them just want to do what they want to do. But most don't just decide one night, I want to write 50-page report because I arrested somebody for being in a grocery store that was next to a child center. So that's just something. All right. And I think we're
Number
on
nine.
question number nine.
Okay, how does prosecutorial discretion fit into this?
The district attorney in Oklahoma has discretion over which statute to charge or use in a plea. In most criminal cases, people understand that charging discretion affects the criminal case. But in a registry case, that same discretion can also control the registry consequence. In my case, my concern is that the statute used in the plea had the practical effect of placing me in a 25-year registration category, even though a possession specific statute would have carried a 15-year registration period with the possibility of applying for relief after 10 years of compliance. That means years of additional registry punishment can flow from the statute selected, not from an individualized risk assessment. You're from California, correct, Dan?
No, I'm from Missouri and Kansas.
Okay, so you live up in that area then?
I lived in Missouri for a lot of years. He was charged in Missouri, but now we live in Kansas.
Awesome. That's what I needed to know. I know kind of Kansas law because it kind of follows Oklahoma law a lot.
We're
So
kind
I
of new to Kansas, and honestly, Kansas has been nice for us because Kansas doesn't have residency restriction, and Missouri does. And also, when he moved to Kansas, he was given lifetime parole or lifetime supervision. And when he moved to Kansas, his parole officer was like, so sir, you've been out of jail for 11 years. What are you still doing on supervision? He was like, I don't know. And his parole officer suggested we transfer his federal case to Kansas. And then Kansas, we paid a lawyer some money and they took him off lifetime supervision.
So I was just, and it's funny because Kansas was one of the states that I was looking at because there's a, what is that new water park thing that they have? My, trying to think. It's a big indoor water park.
We don't have kids, so I
I
mean,
got you.
we don't. My kids are grown. They don't come to the water park with me.
So are mine, but I have grandkids now. So what they what my son and daughter-in-law asked me, can you go to this water park in these states? And I can't remember the water park for the life of me. So I started looking into the states that I could actually go to and go to these water parks because we don't have one in Oklahoma. And Kansas was the very first state that it said that the restrictions are a lot less, the reporting is a lot less, things are a little bit more relaxed. So it suggested that as the first state that I could go to the water park without actually getting into trouble because I'm not
Also,
habitual
Kansas
or
and Oklahoma are so close.
yeah. Well, Oklahoma's getting stricter, unfortunately. Hopefully Kansas doesn't follow that lead because we're right next to Texas. Texas is pretty strict. Right next to the New Mexico. New Mexico's pretty strict. So we're in that,
Arizona is really strict.
yeah, we're in that area where everybody's pretty strict, so Oklahoma's following the lead. And we're predominantly a red state, though I don't like a lot of the Democratic policies. I don't like a lot of the Republican policies either. But if you're in a Republican red state, you're pretty much just whatever goes down the line for a registrant is what goes down the line. And it's hard, very hard to fight. We have been able to knock some statutes down recently that, like custody of your children, you would be forced to have automatic visitation or supervised visitation with your children, no matter whether you had. And you cannot, they had a statute coming that you couldn't be a custodial parent if you were on the registry. A lot of that stuff got, side tabled or struck down. HB 3040,
Nice.
fortunately, was passed and is on the governor's table. We're all writing the governor today. Anybody that's in here from Oklahoma, make sure that you're writing the governor to try to
What's
oppose
the name of the
this.
thing?
HB 3040, and it's called the Zone of Safety Law.
Don't tell anyone, but I pretend to be from all kinds of states. Sometimes I call all 100 senators and I pick like a restaurant on a corner and I say that's my address. And so I get text messages or email messages from lots and lots of states.
Yeah,
So
I emailed
I'll call your governor.
him. And it's Governor Stitt, so he's we do we a lot of us emailed him earlier and gave him an email about how broad the statute is and how bad it's going to be for our children and our families because it destroys a lot of things that we can do with our families. It says, hey, if you're aggravated or habitual, you can't go into these areas even if you have children. So if they want to take their kids bowling or if they want to do this, I say they, I'm part of a registry too, but I'm kind of, there's a category of habitual and aggravated that are being more affected than I am. And I understand that. And you got to be empathetic. I think he's raising his hand, Matt.
Yes, you're unmuted, Matt.
No, just because I'm a level three that has aggravated. So I have to deal with all those things, but like I have went to parks and I have done the things that I'm not supposed to do. So it's like it seems kind of redundant to make a law that you're not enforcing. So it's like, and with all the budget cuts and everything, it's like, why are you straining police officers more? The ones that I've interacted with here and there, they don't even like what they have to do with these check-ins and everything. So like maybe somehow if there was a way to get police officers to start talking to politicians and saying, look, we don't like this stuff, but
They already do. They
they.
every all kinds of police officers, detectives. My detective has complained about it to the state. They already do. They just don't listen. Politicians don't listen to anybody except for their own minds and their own voices.
That's crazy. I mean, there's a case and I saw something about a senator in Utah has a family member that got caught up in a child sex crime and now he's trying to change the statute for age of consent so he can get his family member out of the situation.
Yeah, so let me tell you what's funny about my case is the judge that I put my plea in for, his son had to sign a plea bargain directly after that and forced the same judge into retirement because his son had to plea out to a similar charge of mine. So his I literally pled out with the same judge that his kid went in and pled out. not even 3 months later to almost the same. Actually, he had aggravated, but he pled out, and he it forced him to ha that judge to retire directly after taking my plea. So
Wow.
it was definitely kind of irony in the whole thing. And when you always have the preacher's kid or the judge's kid, that's always that one. But it just
Yeah.
it's I saw all the irony in it because he just had to take my plea bargain, and he actually this judge and judges mostly are there to try to be the person to be of
Kind of a voice for reason, maybe.
yeah, he's trying to be the voice of reason, but there's a lot of things in his way, statutory, and a lot of things politicians have put in judges' way to keep them from actually doing their proper job. They are forced into doing what they have to do and not what they need to do, per se. And it's a lot of politics. It's become more politics than actually criminal, convicting criminal behavior. They're politicians up there politicking for their jobs. So they have to do what the society deems they have to do, or they're not going to get reelected in that position next term.
Yep.
So that's why we're having so many problems right now, because right now, of
Yep.
course, we're on, are we on midterms yet? I think we are. There's a lot of elections going
Getting
on.
there.
But they have to be elected. And if they look bad in front of the public, even though they have a different mindset than what they're portraying on screen, it makes them look bad in front of the public eye. So they can't portray their actual feelings towards what they want to do, because if they do that, they're not going to be elected
Yeah,
next.
right, exactly.
So that was
Okay, I am noticing that we are at 8:30 and we have a lot of questions left, and so I was wondering if I could convince you to come back in 2 weeks, and instead of going for another hour and a half, could you come back in 2 weeks and just start from here, and I'll see if I can get my guy who was supposed to be in 2 weeks to move back?
That's completely
That's
fine with me. I don't want to push anybody past where they're at right now. And hopefully everybody's kind of taken note of what's being said and what's happening. And so,
Because I mean, you've done a lot of work, and so I don't want to not finish your talk, but I also I try to be mindful of people's time, and an hour and a half is, that's as long as I usually run it
yeah,
is. So,
people, honestly, people stop as I've, like I said,
and you can only absorb so much,
I'm a
right?
psychology major, so I can tell you that people literally stop absorbing after 30 to 45 minutes. Once
Yeah.
it's to that point, they start getting disinterested, wanting to do other things and finding other things to do. But let's
Yeah.
do one more small question
Okay.
real quick
All
because this
right.
will
Number,
end it.
whoops, hang on. What happened to my number 10? Okay, there it is. Okay, so number 10. Are you saying the prosecutor intentionally used the statute to extend your registration?
What I can say with certainty of practical effect, the statute used in my judgment placed me in a 25-year registration category. A possession-specific statute would have placed me in a 15-year registration category with possible relief pathway after 10 years. I personally believe the statute selected in my plea was used in a way that extended my registry period, but I also understand that proving intent is something an attorney would need to review carefully. The broader policy concern is clear either way. If prosecutors can choose between overlapping statutes, which again, if it just has the possession language in it, they can use it, and that choice controls registry duration, then registry punishment can be expanded through charging discretion rather than individualized review. So meaning prosecutor can play pick a statute and increase your registration level if they believe that you should be on the registration longer, not what your current
Yeah.
time imposes, but if they believe you should be on the registration longer. So, and that's what I wanted to kind of, because we were getting into that. And like I said, the next one, the aggravated possession, this will be kind of lead into the next week. So, the consequences, the aggravated possession consequence is this is one of the clearest examples of why the structure needs review. The ODOC level assignment chart list 1021, we've already went through all that, but that means someone convicted under a statute used in my judgment can be registered longer than someone who has offense is labeled aggravated possession. That is hard to explain from proportionality standpoint. If aggravated possession is listed as level one, but a broader statute containing possession language treated as level two, then should people be asking why the registry system is truly calibrated if the registry system is truly calibrated to conduct and risk, or whether it is being driven by statutory labels that create inconsistent outcomes? And that leads into next week. I wanted to kind of.
Yeah, it's been driven by, man, we can make a lot of money. You know,
Yep.
we incarcerate more than 10 times more people than any other country, and we've convinced all of our population that this is normal. Yep, you're supposed to incarcerate this many people. They're bad people. They should all be in prison. No, that's insanity.
Try to guess who's number two.
Who's number two?
UK.
Nicaragua?
UK.
Nuh-uh.
UK. You know what's funny about the UK? And like I said, I don't want to be disrespectful of people's time, but I want to bring this up. The flock cameras that we currently have that read our license plates, UK has facial recognition readers that read people's faces and tell them who they are. So, like our zone of safety law, they started with flock cameras too. Our zone of safety law, if they start doing facial recognition and have this zone of safety law in place, then they can recognize who we are, see that we're a registrant, and arrest us on the spot or come to our house and arrest us with a warrant because now they have,
Because they've got a thing that says you were somewhere you weren't allowed to be.
they have probable cause. The UK actually has that in effect and have been arresting registrants because they have a similar registry thing to ours. They literally are arresting registrants for walking past places they're not supposed to be, for all kinds of stuff within that same category. And that's what I want us to avoid here, because we've already got flock cameras and we need to fight those with all we can, because the flock camera reads your license plate. And what do we have to do when we register? We have to register our license plate to our vehicle in Oklahoma that we drive on a regular basis. So what does that flock camera do? It pings us and shows where we have driven, what we've done that day, why we've done it, blah, 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 because of those flock cameras. But the flock cameras were supposedly put there to be able to make sure people have insurance and to read the license plate and not go after the stuff that they're really going after. It's a hidden
Yeah,
agenda.
none of this should be surprising to anyone who's
And may
read
be
any
true for
books
the
or studied any
implementing laws.
history. None of this should surprise us.
Matt knows he I think he lives somewhere close to one of those flock cameras, and I have one now just down. It's literally, if I drive past the courthouse every day, it runs my license plate. It's a block from my house. So those flock cameras are something else we're going to have to fight, because in my opinion, that's against our constitution.
Oh,
And
absolutely.
well, the Meta AI glasses aren't good either, because a group of college kids hacked, added program, extra software to them to make them put wireframes around people's faces while you're approaching them and facial ID you, and it'll run a scan and like, oh, like it picked out, they walked up to like three different people in a video and was like, oh, are you so and so? And they were able to sit there and read articles in the lens of the glasses of these people, and then sit and then talk to them about stuff.
Yeah, and it's getting very scary, and that's where the
Matt,
register.
put a pin in that. I want to hear more about that in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's
That
terrifying.
register, I will look it up and get more into find more out about it and stuff like that.
Meta AI is actually trying to like roll out a 2.0 version and like do that themselves within the software without you having a third party add it yourself. Without you having to jailbreak it, they're trying to do that, add it as a later feature
And
somewhere.
if they do that, it's going to, we have enough vigilantism by just going on Facebook and looking us up, or looking us up through the registration, finding our houses and stuff. Just think if they can automatically see who we are as we're walking
Yeah.
by somewhere, or recognize our kids and see who they are, or our wife and see who they are. That it's just
Wow.
the registration being open and available to the public is it's not okay, and it's
That's
not
right.
going
Yeah.
to be. The more we get into socials, the more we get into software, the more we get into AI, the more we get into
AI.
that stuff, it's going to be
Yeah.
a point
No, we're
where they can't
the
just
fourth horseman
continue
of the
to.
apocalypse, I think. AI is gonna, we're gonna all go down with it.
Our
Yeah.
college, my college courses in the last college course, we weren't allowed to use AI until the last 3 months, and now they've incorporated a policy where we're allowed to use AI for certain features of our writing, like editing and brainstorming and stuff of that sort. It still has to be our writing, but
I
you
think
are.
it just makes you dumber. It just if anytime something gets hard, you can just go ask AI to do it. You're dumber. You're dumber. It's like WALL-E and Don't Look Up and Idiocracy all are
Oh,
just.
we're great towards all three of those, and none of us sees it.
Oh, I
It's
see it. I see
oh,
it. There's nothing I can do about it.
yeah, we can't stop it. It's going to be what it's going to be. But when we're going to be living in space on a bunch of little runaround things with carpet cleaners, I mean, everybody wants everything right at their fingertips right now, and that's becoming the problem of the world. It's well, I want it right now. I don't want to work for it, and I don't care
I
who
want
I
to
have to
think
hire to get
hard.
it.
Want
So,
someone else to do the thinking, and I'm gonna just yeah. All right, so I'm gonna tell everybody how to save the chat because I don't know, there's stuff in there, you might want it. So if you have the chat open, there's three dots at the top, kind of top right. And you click on those three dots, and the top thing is save chat. And what will happen then is after we end this and shut the Zoom down, this will just pop up on your screen somewhere. It'll be like, oh. And it's not quite as easy to look at because it'll be no black, it'll all be black and white, but whatever. Okay, so I'm gonna assume that I can talk my 2 weeks from now guy into moving, and we're gonna finish this conversation with Trent in 2 weeks on the 19th, on May 19th.
okay, let me so I will put it on my schedule. My wife's surgeries have not been, we didn't get into
Oh,
that.
yes. No, 100%. If your wife, if something comes up in your personal life, that is no problem at all. Then we'll
Okay.
do you in 4 weeks,
Okay,
right?
that's fine.
You don't
It
come back
either
in 2 weeks,
way
come back in
works
four
for
weeks.
me. I'd kind of like to go in 2 weeks while it's fresh in everybody's mind, but again,
Yeah, well, just reach out because I do have somebody who's scheduled for 2 weeks from now. If 2 weeks from now doesn't work, we'll just put you off till June.
okay, that's fine.
Okay.
And we'll look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks.
Yes. And thank you for all the hard work you did in just preparing this. And yeah, that was really well done.
Thank
Okay.
you
Ooh, hang
for
on. Before I
allowing me
quit,
to
I got to
be
read
able to
this.
present it.
All right. I thank you very much, everyone, for coming. And I'm not going to shut the thing down because I got to read a personal message in the chat real fast. Yes. Tomorrow. Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you later.
Have a good night, Ann. Matt, thanks for all your input, bud. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Even what you were able to get through. I mean, I kind of didn't. I mean, I don't know if I really knew or cared, or I don't know, because like a lot of the stuff is punitive and it's overreaching, and it's like, why can't I go? Like, I mean, I'm not a religious person by really that much of any means, but it's like to really, I mean, I did ask for permission, but that was when I was on probation. I thought it was only at that time. But if you have to ask for permission even after probation and like 10 years later to go to church, that's crazy. It's like you're denying somebody religious access over that. And then it's like after my charge, in the same county with the same judge and in the same DA before he retired, there was a church pastor in that county that got in trouble with doing something with boys on a camp retreat, and he got 6 months in jail, and I think a level one or two, and it was said that 6 months would be he'll know the fear of God in those 6 months or something like that. I don't remember the exact article, but it was like I don't know. Almost if I could have got like 6 months in jail, maybe. But and I have been told like I should be grateful I didn't go in, and I am. But it's just like first time offense. I didn't go meet. You came and arrested me 2 years later. Where's the justification of lifetime?
Yeah, and I understand completely where you're going with this because I'm kind of reading through the chat and some of the stuff is bothering me a little bit, but it's fine. I understand completely what you're saying. It's I had the stuff that I had on my computer. It's not that it's not bad because it is, but it's a first time offense. I had six videos and pictures on my computer, and none of my other devices had it. So it was kind of a like my personal laptop, my personal phone, my personal stuff. I didn't have anything on any of that stuff. So it just frustrated me that it pointed to some kids doing something they shouldn't have done, and they literally wanted somebody, so they did what they did. So setting people up like that, we don't want to go into that conversation on this chat. It's better not.
Well, yeah, we could. I mean, I've emailed quite a bit of it in like the whole group, and I think just to you and the email chain that we have. But like, yeah, they pursued me. I stopped conversating. They sent a rebate email, like where'd you go? Kind of questioning. And I still didn't respond. And it's like, I get there is a devil's advocate, maybe to an extent of playing undercover of stuff. But if, and I even told these detectives that showed up at my house, because like they started doing, they're starting it back. I was told by you go to the downtown office and know that Sherry lady at all? Do you know? Are
Yeah,
you?
I actually know her personally.
Okay,
The
well, yeah.
downtown office, I was DOC, so she used to actually work at my prison and then went to the upper administration in Oklahoma City. So I actually know that lady personally.
Okay, well, I called her, like I wanted to ask a different question, but she was like, yeah, that's not a new thing. They had started doing it right before COVID, where they're gonna be sending detectives or somebody out after you update your letter, and they're just gonna do like a afterwards checkup. And these last two that came out, like, I mean, they've been pretty chill, but it's just like, why are we wasting all these police resources if we don't have the resources? Like, I kind of lost where else I was going with that, but
I
either
do that
way,
all.
like, but oh yeah, and then I did like kind of straight up ask him. I was like, is there any way like to be a CI for you guys? Like, y'all have screwed my life enough kind of situation. And they're like, no, unfortunately, with that type of situation, we wouldn't accept that. But either way, like, I guess like my whole situation experience so far hasn't been terrible. It's just showing the ID part whenever you go to a bank, or I've been to the hospital a few times because of my gallbladder or kidney stones, and when it comes to billing and all that. So I just leave my wallet at home or in the car and say I didn't bring my ID, or yeah, I don't go to a dispensary anymore, so I don't have to ID for that. But yeah, all the stuff that you would have to ID for is like watching that person's face and their demeanor completely change. Like, I've sat in a bank before trying to open a business bank account, and the conversation was going great with this person until it came time to, hey, let me get your driver's license and go take a copy of it. And then they come back and completely, like, here you go, sign, here's your stuff back, and we're done. The complete silence and all business after that.
Yeah. Oh, I understand, man. I'm gonna have to get off here because it's getting close to me. My wife
Yeah,
had her
you're
knee
good.
surgery and everything, so I gotta be able to get her to bed and get her done for the night. So I appreciate everything that you helped me along with, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Yes, sir. You have a good rest of your night.
You too, bud. Appreciate it.
Yep.